this morning, I'll just go ahead and tell you. I changed the title of the sermon four times this week. I have rewritten this sermon four times this week because every time I would start on it, I would get a different idea. I had a terrible time with this sermon. Sometimes that means it's going to be one of the best sermons. Sometimes it means it's going to be a train wreck. So you just have to stick around and see which one it is. We'll find out together. When I was in college, I had a professor stood up in front of class one day, and I didn't really care what he was saying because I didn't think it applied to me. But he was talking about guys who were going into the ministry, and I wasn't planning on going into the ministry, so I wasn't really paying that much attention. But I do remember he said this. He said, some of you guys will labor for most of your careers in obscurity. Now, some of you can appreciate that. How many of you have ever felt invisible at your job or at your school or someplace where you just felt like nobody saw you, nobody noticed you, didn't seem like anything you did anybody paid attention to? You were just one in a large crowd. Now, some people love that. I have friends who go to really big churches so that no one knows they're there. You know anybody like that? They just like to be in a big crowd. They don't like anybody to notice them. Like at a church this size, if you're here and you're not here, somebody will probably notice. But sometimes people don't like to be noticed because when people notice you, you know what they do? They ask you to do stuff. But if nobody sees you, if you feel like you're invisible, for some people that's a good thing. But for some people it's not. So we're going to be looking at a passage from Acts chapter 1 this morning. I'm not going to lie, initially this sermon was supposed to be about Matthias, and it kind of changed when I started writing it. But this is the gist of this. We're going to start in verse 20. We have now come together. There are about 120 people who have gathered in a room, and Peter has gotten up in front of this group of assembled believers, and he is speaking. And if you want to call this Peter's first official sermon, that's fine. But Peter is quoting the Psalms, and it says, for as written in the book of Psalms, let his homestead be made desolate, and let no one dwell in it, and let another man take his office. Now, he's obviously talking here about Judas, who has betrayed Jesus and then went out and committed suicide. And so Judas is dead, and so Peter's talking about him, and he says, let another man take his office. In other words, we need another apostle, a 12th apostle. Now, I want you to listen to what he says in verse 21. He says, therefore, it is necessary that of the men who have accompanied us all the time. Now, I want you to notice that phrase. The men who have accompanied us all of the time, that the Lord Jesus went in and out among us, beginning with the baptism of John. So he's talking about when John the Baptist baptizes Jesus. Starting with the baptism of John until the day that he was taken up from us. Okay, that's the ascension. One of these must become the witness with us of the resurrection. Now, at this point, I want to stop and ask a question. How many of you have seen The Chosen? How many of you have watched any of The Chosen? Okay. If you've never seen The Chosen, that's fine. But if you've watched The Chosen, this would be very evident to you. If you've never seen The Chosen, just kind of think for yourself how you picture Jesus traveling around. When we picture Jesus traveling around during his ministry, how many people do you picture with him? Now, most of you, if you're honest, you picture 12 dudes, maybe Mary Magdalene and a few other women, but generally you picture the 12, right? Okay. Why do you only picture 12? They're the only ones mentioned. If you read Matthew's gospel and John's gospel, two of the guys who were there, do they ever name anybody besides the 12? Nope. Do they ever mention, oh, and by the way, there were 12 of us traveling with Jesus and a larger posse? Nope. No reference to anybody. But in Acts 1, Peter says, okay, we've got to pick a guy who's been with us the whole time. And when he says the whole time, Peter's very specific. From Jesus' baptism. Now, how early is that? Does anybody remember how early that is? That's at the very beginning, okay? That's at the very beginning. That's at the very beginning. He says, it's got to be a guy that was with us from that to the ascension. And when did the ascension happen? In relation to this chapter. Yesterday? Today? I mean, it just happened. Now, if there were only 12 people traveling with Jesus, who could fit that role? And guess what the answer is? Nobody. So, here's my question. Who are the other guys? Now, let me ask you a question. If you traveled, because what we're really going to be talking about today is about humility in service. Have any of you ever felt like you did not get recognized for something you did? Me and Jim, we're the only two. Okay. Gracie has. Okay. Now, the truth is, most of us in this room have probably felt this at some point where and by the way, this is not just about the workplace. This can be at home. If you're a wife and you feel like you do a lot of stuff at home and your husband doesn't appreciate everything you do, some of the wives are sitting there going, I see some head nodding now. Now we got somewhere. Sometimes it's the husband who feels like the wife doesn't appreciate the stuff he does, you know. Sometimes it's the children who feel like my parents don't appreciate, you know, I'm out there working hard at school. I'm trying to make C's. I'm working hard, you know. It happens in the workplace. Sometimes it happens at church. Let's be honest. There are jobs in church that if you do, you probably are going to get a certain amount of attention for doing them. But there are some jobs that you do that you feel nobody really notices. I talk about this a lot, not necessarily up here, but I probably should say it more up here. Greta, does anybody know how long Greta's been on staff here besides me? 20 years. Greta has been our children's minister for 20 years. But you know where Greta is every Sunday? She's in the back. And so some of you probably heard that and were like, 20 years? Really? Some of you may be like, she's still here? I don't ever see her. That's because she's always in the back with the kids. That job doesn't always get a lot of appreciation. Now, it might from parents who have kids. But if you don't have kids back there, it's out of sight, out of mind sometimes. And so in ministry or in other jobs or maybe even at home, we all know what it feels like to do something and feel like, well, we're just not being appreciated. So imagine you are Cleophas. Now, Cleophas is mentioned in Luke on the road to Emmaus. He's one of the disciples that Jesus appears to on the road to Emmaus. And Cleophas, according to Luke, was one of the disciples. So maybe Cleophas is one of these guys that's been there for 3 years. We know from the verse coming up that Matthias and Joseph Barsabbas, who's otherwise known as Justice, we know those guys have been there from the beginning. So there have been guys who have been with Jesus. Now, imagine this, as long as Peter, Andrew, James, and John. But they weren't part of the 12. Why do you think they weren't part of the 12? They weren't the chosen. Thank you, Belinda. Dallas didn't put him in the script. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm not trying to be funny. It'll be funny, but I'm not trying to be funny. Okay? Why were there 12? Because the 12 tribes of Israel. So, if there can only be 12, and you've got 40 people, how many can there be in the 12? There can only be 12. That's it. There can only be 12. Now, let's think about this. Of the 12, how many do we know anything about? We know Peter, James, John, and Andrew. We know those four. They were fishermen. Peter, James, and John because they're part of the inner circle. Andrew because he's Peter's brother. Outside of those four, how many of them really do any talking in the Gospels? Matthew writes a gospel, but he doesn't really say much in the Gospels. Thomas has a few speaking parts. He says stuff two or three different times. But outside of Matthew and Thomas and what we would call the big four, Nathaniel doesn't say much. James the Less doesn't say, he just even got a rotten name. James the Less, what? We know that there's a zealot named Simon. He doesn't say much. He doesn't really have a lot of speaking parts in the Gospels. And so really what happens is we start to understand that from the very beginning, Jesus was surrounded by people who didn't get any attention. They just quietly went out and did their jobs. And that is the engine that drives ministry. It's the people who do the work that aren't on stage. It's the people who do the work out there, out in the community, the people who quietly do ministry that don't always get a lot of attention, but do a lot of good stuff. But we have become a culture that is driven and focused on attention. Especially in the culture we live in now, everybody wants their 15 minutes. YouTube and TikTok. Any idiot with a camera can put themselves on the internet. And by the way, I will sometimes sit there and I will scroll during commercials and I'll find some video where people are on the internet doing stupid things, and it's amusing to me. I find, like, when people fall off ladders and stuff, I know it sounds terrible, but some of that stuff's really funny. Now, Stephanie will tell you that my new favorite thing is cat videos. Not the real cat videos, those AI cat videos. Like when some cat comes in the middle of the night and wakes somebody up by playing a trumpet, there's a Marachi band and it's all cats. I find that greatly entertaining, and I don't really know why. Huh? Or a banjo. A cat playing a banjo with no opposable thumbs. It's glorious and probably better for me than a lot of things on the internet. But when you start to think about this, Peter says, we've got to replace Judas. We've got to replace Judas with somebody. And he says, so we've got to pull one of the guys that's been with us the whole time, one of these guys. And again, because we always just picture the 12, you're like, well, how could that be? But think about this. How many people are in the upper room when Peter's talking? 120. Now, let me ask you a question. How long do you think most of those people have been following Jesus? And the truth is, it's entirely possible that a lot of those people have been with him from the beginning. But that's not how we picture it because of the way we think of the story and we think of the 12. Now, I'm gonna look at another passage in a minute to kind of talk about this. But let's finish up this section here in Acts. So he says, one of these must become a witness with us of the resurrection. Next slide, please. So they put forward two men. Now, to me, that sounds like there were maybe more than two. It's not the only two options they had, but they put forward these two. Joseph called Barsabbas, who was also called Justice, and Matthias. And they prayed and said, "You, Lord, know the hearts of all men. Show which of these two you have chosen to occupy the ministry and apostleship from which Judas turned aside to go his own place." Now, how are they going to pick them? Is there going to be a vote? What are they going to do? And they drew lots for them, and the lot fell to Matthias, and he was added to the 11. Poor Joseph Barsabbas. He is this close after 3 years in obscurity, following Jesus and watching the 12 get all the attention. He is this close. And he probably a number of times went, I'm better than Judas. Nobody trusts Judas. I should be an apostle, not Judas. So now Judas is gone and he's got his shot. And it's down to him and one other guy. And what do? They flip a coin. Now the lot, according to most of the commentaries, the drawing of lots would have been essentially they put two stones in a box, put each guy's name on a stone, shook the box up and turned it over, and the first stone that fell out was the guy. Democracy in action. Maybe we should start doing that politically. I don't know that we could do any worse if we just started closing our eyes and just picking a name out of a box. They drew lots, and the lot fell on Matthias, and he was added to the 11 apostles. Well, there you go. Poor Joseph Barsabbas. 3 years he has followed Jesus. He has been with the... Now, I can't stress this enough. In those 3 years that the apostles have been away from their families and their jobs, so have these other people. Laboring in obscurity, and now here's his moment, here's his chance, and the lot falls to Matthias. Now, how many of you would have gone away from that meeting mad if you were Joseph Barsabbas? Really? Can we do 2 out of 3? I mean, really? How many of you have ever looked at a person getting more attention than you and said, I'm better than that person? I'm not going to lie. I do that all the time. We've got our preacher lunch, you know, and we'll go to preacher's lunch and we'll be sitting there talking. And my good friend, Timmy Turner, Tim's always, it's like, Tim, what are you doing? Oh, I got a revival this week. Tim, what are you doing? I got a revival this. And it's like, well, nobody ever asked me to do revivals. I'm a better preacher than you. And he always laughs when I say that because he knows it's true. I'm joking. Tim and I are good friends. We joke about this. I joke about this with Winfred. Winfred's always like, where are you going, Winfred? I'm going to speak at this place. Well, how? Well, they invited me. I'm like, okay. Any of you ever felt like nobody pays attention to you? By the way, let me tell you, every Sunday when you're up here preaching, and like every once in a while you'll look out there and you'll see people talking, and it's like, really? I mean, right in front of me? You know, you realize I can see you, right? You know, or when some of you doze off and it's like, really? Really? I worked really hard on this sermon and you're dozing off? And by the way, somebody told me one Sunday, he said, Stuart, I'm sorry I fell asleep, but I'll catch it on YouTube later. Like, yeah, if you wouldn't watch it live, well, yeah, okay. We've all had those moments, though. We've all had those moments when we feel overlooked and underappreciated. And I want you to imagine how you would feel if you're one of these people that's been following Jesus for 3 years and nobody talks about you. All right? Nobody talks about you. Now, we're going to go now to Luke chapter 10. And we're going to start in verse 1. This is a really interesting story because it's one of those stories that only Luke records. This is the only gospel it's in. And we don't really talk about it a lot, but it's an interesting story. It says in Luke chapter 10, verse 1, now after this time, the Lord appointed 70 others and sent them in pairs ahead of him to every city and place he himself was going to come. His advance team, his prep team. How many of them were there? 70. And notice it says the Lord appointed 70 others, which implies that these are not, the 12's not included in that group. Well, who are these people? It never tells us. Luke never names any of them. Matthew, Mark, and John don't even tell this story. But there are 70 people who were with Jesus. And he says, I want you guys to go out and prepare all these places for me. Now, what do you suppose are the chances that these 70 people travel with Jesus all the time? And what I'm hoping you're going to see by the time we're done today is that when you close your eyes and picture Jesus walking through the promised land on his ministry, that you don't picture him walking with 12 guys. You picture him with a group that may be as large as 80 or 100. This is a large group that's traveling with him. Now, how do we know these people were not just random people? Let's go to verses 8 and 9. He's given them instructions here, and in verse 8, listen to what it says. He goes, whatever city you enter, and they receive you, eat what is set before you. My dad quoted that passage to me when he was a preacher and I was a preacher's kid. And we'd go home to eat with somebody. And he'd go, whatever they put in front of you, eat it. Because I was a picky eater. And you'd be surprised some of the crazy mess people put in front of me. It's like a scene from Indiana Jones. Says, when you enter into it and they receive you, eat what is set before you. Now listen to this. And heal those in who are sick and say to them, the kingdom of God has come near to you. Now, how important are these 70 people? How random are these people? Look what Jesus gives them the power to do. He gives them the power to heal. Now, how long do you think these people must have been with Jesus if he trusts them with the power to heal people as he sends them into these cities? I think these people have been with him from the beginning. He knows them. He trusts them. He's ministered to them. He's taught them. And here's one of the interesting things about them. Even though all of them know they're not the 12, they are content with the role Christ has chosen for them to play. Now, we see in some of Paul's letters that people in the church sometimes struggle with this. In Corinthians, people are squabbling about the spiritual gifts they have. Some people speak in tongues. They don't like that gift. They'd rather be able to heal. The people who can heal rather be able to speak in tongues. Nobody's ever happy with the gift they have. They want somebody else's gift, or maybe they want multiple gifts. Or they want everybody to see them. They want to be up in the front. They don't like their job. And so in this particular text, what we find out is that Jesus has this large crowd that's traveling with him, and he empowers them to go out and do ministry even though they're not the 12. Now, let's assume for a minute that Matthias and Joseph Barsabbas, and we'll throw Cleophas in there from the road to Emmaus. Let's assume that those three guys are part of this 70. That means how many of them do we not know their names? 67. Look at those math skills. 67. 67 people who are serving Jesus, traveling with Jesus. They've given up all the same things that the 12 have given up. They are doing all the same stuff. But you don't know their name. You don't know who they are. Their names have been lost to history. They're not famous. They don't have books of the Bible named after them. They're just people who are doing what? Serving God for the sake of serving God. That's pretty cool. Now, let's go to the next slide. When you get to the end of this text in Luke chapter 10, you get down to verses 17 through 20, they come back and they're telling Jesus about everything that happened. And one of the really interesting things, they come back and here's what they tell Jesus. They said, guess what? While we were out there healing people, even the demons obeyed us in your name. We weren't just healing people. We were casting out demons, Jesus, in your name. We were doing all this amazing stuff. And I want you to listen to what Jesus says to them in verse 20. He says, nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you. Now, if you could cast evil spirits out of people, some of you are like, man, I got a lot of people. Well, I wouldn't even know where to start. If you could cast evil spirits out of people, how many of you would be pretty proud of yourself if you could do that? I think that'd be pretty cool. Okay, I want you to look at what Jesus says. He says, don't rejoice in this. It's like, hey, Jesus, you're never going to guess what happened. We were able to cast out evil spirits in your name, and they are all excited about it. And he goes, don't rejoice in this. He said, don't rejoice that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are recorded in heaven. Now, I found that verse incredibly interesting. Because where are their names not recorded? In Matthew or Mark or Luke or John or Acts or anywhere. None of us know their names. Their names are lost to history. And Jesus tells them, by the way, long before any of those books are written, Jesus tells them, don't get too full of yourself and don't rejoice at what you were able to accomplish. Rejoice that your name is recorded where it matters. One of the things that is critical in understanding how ministry works is coming to the realization that the attention and adoration of people means nothing. We live in a society today where it seems like every other day there's some story about some mega church pastor who's become famous and it goes and speaks at all these conferences and has written books, and then all of a sudden it seems like repeatedly stuff comes out about things they've done, and all of a sudden they become disgraced and they're out of the ministry, and it's like, oh, but they were so famous and everybody knew who they were and they got all this attention. How many of you think fame is overrated? I'm going to tell you something. I watched an interview one time on a podcast with someone who was famous. And he was being interviewed by someone who had been a child actor and had kind of was still known for some stuff, but not nearly as famous as this other person. And they were talking about fame. And the guy said, I miss being unknown. He said, I miss being able to go to the grocery store and shop and just be left alone. I miss being able to go out to dinner and not have people stare at me and take pictures of me while I'm trying to eat. He goes, there's no telling how many pictures are out there on the internet of me with a mouthful of food because I'm sitting at a restaurant and everybody's got a cell phone now and every cell phone's got a camera. He goes, and there's constantly people taking pictures of me while I'm trying to do stuff. And he was talking about how, he goes, man, I wish I could go back to a day when nobody knew me. Now, he didn't say anything about giving up the money. He didn't mention giving up the money. But he did say, you know, the idea of being, you know, having some anonymity. But we live in a culture that celebrates recognition. We celebrate recognition and we want everyone to notice us and we want people to see what we're doing and we want to be appreciated. But the problem is we tend to chase appreciation from the wrong sources. I was talking to somebody this morning. They said, Stuart, how long have you been here? I said, a long time. Right, Ethel? 33 years I've been here. Senior minister for 28. And if I make it to 30, that's only 2 years away. But who knows? 30 years. It's like, man, I can count probably just on two hands the number of ministers I know that have been in the same church for 30 years. That'd be quite an accomplishment. It'd be pretty cool. But here's the thing. Whatever recognition I might get for that is irrelevant if God doesn't recognize me on Judgment Day. All the things that we can do in this life to get us attention and accolades and applause, all the things that we can do to get us noticed and appreciated, none of those things matter if our names aren't recorded in heaven. None of that stuff matters. And so what these two passages about today are about the other guys. The guys that weren't the 12. They weren't the inner circle of the three. It's not Peter, James, and John. It's not guys that were part of the 12. It's just these unnamed guys. And maybe some women. Who went out and served anonymously. And they did some cool stuff. They healed people. They cast out demons. But we don't know their names. We don't know who they are. We couldn't guess at who they were if we tried. I mean, maybe if you wanted to go through scripture, no, maybe Barnabas was one of them. Maybe. Maybe Barnabas is one of them. But the reality is, it doesn't really matter who they are, and it doesn't matter that we know their names, because Jesus says, I know your name. I know your name, and I've written it down in heaven, and it's going to be there forever, for all time. Your name is going to be with me. And 2,000 years from now, some bozo in North Carolina is going to be preaching a sermon about you guys, and he's not going to know any of your names. And he's going to be talking about how awesome it is to do work anonymously for God. And he's not going to know your names. But when he's preaching that sermon, I'm going to know every one of your names. I'm going to remember the work you did. And the way you did it, not to gain fame or fortune or attention, but because you loved the Father. I'm going to ask the praise team to come and lead us in our communion time this morning. And what I want to do this morning is challenge you to be mindful of the work that needs to be done in the kingdom. And some of it is, sometimes some of it's in front of people. Sometimes it's where people see you and get attention. But the reality is most of the best work in the kingdom is work other people don't see. The witnessing that you do when you're not around other people, the people that you encourage and lead to Christ that other people don't see, that good work that's anonymous maybe to all of us is never anonymous to the Father.